Strap in and hold on. The fastest 2 hours of radio is going green. Believe Laugh. Believe Laugh, the longest running NASCAR radio show in East Tennessee. Presented by Food City. Value every day. Also brought to you by Bush's Beans, Bobcat of Knoxville, Bill Cox Furniture, Beginning Point Land Survey, Cox General Contracting, CFI Insulation, Phoenix Conversions, and Ted Russell Ford. The Lead Lap is produced in part by Trendsetters Media Group. We print everything. Now, let's go to the top of the pit box. Your pit boss for the Lead Lap, Ron Morton.
Said he's gonna set my soul, gonna set my soul on fire. Got a whole lot of money that's ready to burn, so get those stakes up higher. There's a thousand pretty women waiting out there. They're all living, the devil may care. And I'm just a devil with love to spare. So Viva Las Vegas, Viva Las Vegas. How I wish that there were more than the 24 hours in the day. Even if there were 40 more, I wouldn't sleep a minute away. Oh, there's blackjack and poker and the roulette wheel. A fortune won and lost on every deal. All you need is a strong heart and a nerve of steel. Viva Las Vegas! Viva Las Vegas! Viva Las Vegas with your neon flashing and your one-arm bandits crashing all those hopes down the drain. Viva Las Vegas turning day into night time.
Good morning, race fans. It's week two of the 36-week NASCAR Cup schedule. The smoke is cleared in Daytona, leaving the number 11 of Denny Hamlin as a back-to-back Daytona 500 champion. The Great American Race finally took place on Monday afternoon after a good Florida boot-pouring rain issued fans a Sunday afternoon rain delay. They weren't real happy about that. This all went down just minutes after Air Force One rattled the skies with President Donald J. Trump and our country's prettiest first lady ever, a.k.a. FLOTUS, were both on hand to give the command. It was rumored the rain was due to global warming, perhaps, but we'll never know. However, in spite of the rain, Monday did not disappoint. Ryan Newman took a wild ride in his final approach, losing control of his souped-up Ford Mustang with perhaps the most violent mid-air lick in NASCAR history. Landed him in a hospital bed at Daytona's Halifax Medical Center. He didn't immediately walk out of the crash, but we praise God this morning that he walked out of the hospital on Wednesday, holding each of his young daughter's hands a little closer. There's no current timeline for Newman's return, but Ross Chastain will pilot Newman's number 6 at Las Vegas this weekend. Hello, Sin City. Hatman in studio. Good morning.
Good morning, Ron Morton. Glad to have you back from Daytona. No sunburn. You look like you survived the trip.
It's harder to get into this building than it is to get into the Speedway these days.
I made a comment about getting in the government office here. You know, if we say something that offends you and you try to get in after us, it's going to be very difficult.
Yeah. Did you get in the Cumulus TSA pre-check downstairs?
Yeah, I got frisked. Yeah.
We got to get here a little earlier, Callie Corum.
You know, I'm always driving. Like, yeah. I'm on the track.
Were you putting your makeup on as you came in?
Or, I mean, that kind of girl. Yeah. I have to have two hands on the wheel.
Yeah. Callie Corum in studio. Welcome back. 2020.
I'm so happy to be here.
Isn't it exciting?
It is exciting. It is. I'm really happy to be here. And I just want to let all of our listeners know, since they're not viewers, that Ron Morton has a flow. I didn't even know who this man was when I walked in. I saw the back of him. His hair is almost as long as mine.
It's got scraggly.
Yeah.
I have to move him to California.
Yeah.
It's his winter
look.
Let me
show you. See?
Look at it.
See,
that's
looking good, man. I like it.
At church, they call it a mullet. Is that the flow? Is that a new?
No.
I don't think
new
time?
Yeah. I ain't got mullet. Mullets, I think, when you shave the sides and you still got your flow.
You could have a mullet. We can do that after the show.
I got a little party in the back. A little business in the front. Party in the back.
You know, back in the 80s, it was just called our hairstyle. Now they've named it a mullet. But yeah. That's the way we all looked in the 80s.
Callie called it a flow. I'm going to go with flow? A flow.
I like that.
What is a flow?
That's just when your hair...
Has?
Yes.
Blaine's
it's kind of like when your hair just like flows down the back of your neck. It's not for a girl, but for a guy.
He doesn't have a Zach Corum flow just yet, but he's working on it.
Yeah, you guys, Zach's hair really is as long as mine.
Yeah. Yeah,
it's
nearly,
long.
Nearly. It's nearly as long as Callie's.
It's also turned gray.
Not Zach's, but yours.
Mine, yeah. Or white, you know. Somebody told me what inspired me to let my hair grow is they said, you have beautiful hair. Why do you keep cutting
it
so short?
Off?
You know, I'm married to a hairdresser. I'm Sandy's hairdresser. So she said, you know, hey, if you want to let your hair grow out, I'll keep you trimmed up. So.
Well, and it's the perfect time. It keeps you warm.
I know it is. Speaking
of his winter coat.
Exactly. Speaking of long hair, Mr. Sam Foreman in there, he's got a little hair rocking it in there.
It's all on his
face. It's on his face.
Yeah.
I like it.
How long you been working on that?
Let's see. I don't really exactly remember when the last time I didn't have a beard was, but really growing it out over the last, closing on a year and a half now.
Yeah.
Really?
Are you a beard butter kind of guy? You like groom it?
I do have the beard oil and the well, it depends what you want. Styling cream / just, you know, some conditioner.
Yeah. It's like a whole culture.
Well, year and a half, that's impressive. I mean, it would take me 10 and a half years to grow that big of a beard. That's a little Methuselah action going on there. It looks good, Sam.
Yeah. The bad part is there's still a couple of you in this building. I don't think I could ever top in length of
beard. Yeah.
And it's been a year and a half, so.
So do you have like a hair net for your beard, like a beard net? Do you ever put those on?
No. Don't go that far, but I don't think I'd be hireable in the restaurant industry currently, though.
Do you use a guard? Do you ever thin that out, or is that just, you just, it does what it does?
There's a certain amount of trimming it up that I will do on my own, but at this point I'm kind of invested into the point to where I have a very talented barber who will trim it up for me every couple of weeks.
So no shave November is all year for you?
Basically, I was asked at one point if I would join a No Shave November contest for charity, and I was like, I think I have a little bit of a jump start on y'all.
Yeah,
no,
I think so too.
Maybe we can get him in a bet. Like, if he picks somebody and they lose, he has to shave his beard.
Yeah, I don't think
that's
there's
stakes.
Any amount of money that could do that.
I don't know. We'll see.
Well, Callie might be able to get it done.
I'm
could have
persuasive.
A weakness for pretty women.
She's persuasive.
She is persuasive and pretty.
Oh, thank you.
What do you think, Sam?
She's pretty persuasive.
No, don't make Sam answer.
You want to take that bet with Cal?
That's okay, Sam.
We'll
talk later.
Wait a minute. What was this show about?
That's right. A little bit of off topic. Anyway, we opened the show with heavy hearts this morning. We lost another race buddy, Bobby Tipton. I'm going to dedicate this hour and the next hour to Robert H. Tipton, Bobby Tipton. He and I have been making the Daytona trip together for a long time. He made his last lap in Daytona right beside me this past Saturday. Suffered a fall Saturday night after the race and passed away on Sunday. It's just sort of surreal and hard to believe, Chris Gorham.
Yeah, man, I was sad and sorry to hear that, but happy at the same time that he got to check out at the place that he loved the most, Daytona, got to go on that trip, which like you said, he looked forward to every year. Unfortunate set of circumstances for him, but went on to a better trouble-free place, I'm sure, and glad he was in Daytona and got to make that trip. Didn't get to see the 500, but he got to go with you, and I'm sure he is having a big time whenever he checked out of this world.
Yeah, he was. He had a great day on Saturday. It's just a tragic ending to a great trip and a great run going to Daytona. And he's just a great friend. I mean, he's one of the old racing guys. We talk about the old guys. He loved motorsports. He loved talking about Richard Petty, Junior Johnson, Fireball Roberts, Cale Yarbrough. He was telling me a story about either junior or fireball one year when they were down there. He'd been going down there since like, you know, early 60s. And so he'd seen twice as many 500s that I'd seen. And, you know, these old guys that have all these old stories that were there to see it. I mean, as we talk about, we lost your dad about this time last year, I think, you know, about a week?
Yesterday. Yeah, a year ago yesterday.
Yesterday we lost Little Bill, and we lost Bobby Denton a few years back. And, you know, these guys that saw those things and saw the sport forever, I mean, they're we're charged with keeping those legacies alive. And you know, they were the grassroots. I mean, those were the original fans. Those were the guys that got NASCAR where they are today. And you know, we raise our glass to those guys. I'm humbled that we're able to sit in studio and carry on motorsports. And, you know, we had Dale Inman and Leonard Wood last week, the Hall of Famers. I love sitting down talking to those guys. But, you know, Dale Inman's 83, Leonard Wood's 85. I mean, you know, Leonard lost his brother the year before. I mean, you know, those old guys, I mean, it's, you know, it's almost like we talk about, Honor Air Guard and the war veterans and how right. how little fewer they're left, but I mean they really are dropping fast.
Yeah, and we don't want to let those memories die, because there's so many cool things that those guys do and did, and you know, even I tell some stories to these young men, these kids that are racing now, and I don't think they believe me half the time because they were so outlandish. But we'll talk to a few of those guys here later on, and some of those old race stories that were true. Yeah. I mean, true stories that actually happened, things that they did back then that you couldn't duplicate today.
Yeah, I think we got local race car driver Herman Goddard going to be on with us. Maybe get at Herman and tell a few old stories. I mean, Herman's in his 80s, isn't he?
Yeah, I think Herman's 80. Yeah. And, Herman, I mean, a guy who's in the National Dirt Late Model Hall of Fame, the Knoxville Sports Hall of Fame, which is the only race car driver in it. And Herman has seen a lot, man. Very, very incredible guy that lived through a lot of interesting times in auto racing, for sure.
Yeah, Bobby was telling me about it was either Junior or Fireball. He said, you know, one year we were down here, and he said, you know, back then – they didn't have all these big trucks and stuff. You know, they pulled their race car on open trailer, a lot like some of the dirt car guys still do. Not the guys in the upper echelon, not many, but anyway, like they used to. But anyway, he said his battery went dead in his race car, so he went out to his truck and pulled the battery out of his truck and came back in, put it in his race car, and they got it going again. But, I mean, just old stories like that, you know, that those guys tell, and they were there, you know, they saw it, you know, and Bobby Denton used to tell a story about being over at Smoky Mountain and Wendell Scott. He said that you know, he was leading a race over there and he never had led a race, and everybody was excited, and he said he came into the pits and he said he must have had 100 people come across the wall. They were all on his pit crew, you know. They qualified him for too many people. I mean, you could have that back then, but he said everybody came over to help him.
Everybody wanted to be a part of it. And hey, Ron, there's a story you're talking about that battery. There's a story about Wendell Scott, and I'm not sure if it was at Smoky Mountain, but he actually blew an engine in practice. They took the motor out of the hauler. Yeah. And put it in the race car.
Out of the hauler
and ran the race and then took the motor back out and put it in the hauler and went home.
That's
crazy,
Wendell
Scott did that. And can you imagine doing that now?
I know.
Well, no, you couldn't do that now.
Exactly. the driving question of the day. All right, listen up if you're listening out there. We're going to do a driving question of the day each week that'll go along with your Bristol or Bush Beans race picks. And today I'm going to go ahead and lay it out there. If you guys can be thinking about it, we're going to take open phone lines in the next segment around 11:25, 11:30 in there. We'll be opening up speed lines, taking your Bush Beans pick of the race for Bristol or Bush. But the driving question of the day is, what kind of car did you get your driver's license in? What kind of car did you get your driver's license in? So that should be easy, because most people have their driver's license. And in order to get your driver's license, you had to have a car.
get them.
And hopefully you've got a driver's license.
And hopefully you got a driver's license, or maybe at one time you did.
Hey, and great segue when we talk to Herman Goddard. He's got a driver's license story for us, too. So that'll be a nice segue into that.
Absolutely. So programming note, we're out early today. We got to make way for the Ball Network. I think we've got men's basketball coming your way at 11:30 here on the Sports Animal. It's UT versus Auburn. I think Auburn's ranked number 13th. I don't think Tennessee's ranked right now, are they, Sam?
Not in the top 25 now.
Yeah. No, they're not.
Yeah, but Auburn's 13th, somewhere in there.
Yes, I think that's where they fell to this week.
Bruce Pearl.
There you go.
Yeah, Bruce Pearl.
Everybody be watching that. So, anyway, just a reminder, we'll be out at 11:30, and men's basketball will follow that. So, cutting it a little bit short today, but let's talk a little bit about the Daytona 500, and we're going to break it down more in depth coming up in the second hour. But what your thoughts about the Daytona 500?
Yeah, man, I thought it was a great race. You know, it was an oddity. Only the second time that thing's been rained completely out and ran at a different date. But, you know, I didn't get to see a lot of it. We were trying to work and pay the bills there. Sure. But got to see the last 50 or so laps, listen to it on the radio, which is one of my favorite ways to consume an auto race anyway. But got to see about the last 50 laps, and what I heard and seen was very competitive. You know, Ryan Newman and the Fords up there, the Toyotas kind of had a lot of trouble. Kyle Busch blowing an engine, which is unusual for the Toyotas or any of those cars right now. But, man, I thought the race was very competitive. I thought the end of the race was very good. I was rooting for Newman. He was kind of a dark horse. And, man, just couldn't hang on there on that last few feet. I mean, you just think, Ron, how life is. You go from seeing the checkered flag waving and in another second and a half, you're going the Daytona 500 to going through what he went through, and everybody thought he was hurt. I don't remember seeing an accident since Jeff Bodine's truck wreck at Daytona that I really feared that the driver was gravely injured. I mean, I really, where that lick was in the top of the hoop of the car and then landing on the same area of the car, man, I really, really thought he was hurt. I think a lot of people did. And man, bounced out there and ran out of the hospital barefooted holding his girl's hands was awesome to see. I mean, that accident probably did more for Ryan Newman's career than winning the 500 would have done. I mean, we've talked more about Ryan Newman than we have Denny Hamlin, of course.
Sure, absolutely. Corey?
You know, I was following it on Twitter, and I had checked, you know, about 45 minutes before the end of the race, and I started seeing, like, videos of the crash. So automatically, my roommate's boyfriend, he's really the only one that I'm close to in Jeff City that follows racing, we, like, pulled it up on the TV and watched the wreck just, like, over and over and over again. And we were like, is he okay? Is he going to, like, survive this? It was just, I think it was so scary. And obviously, like Dad said, that's much more talked about than Denny Hamlin this week. So, but really happy to see that he's okay and he walked out. And also happy for Ryan Blaney that everything ended up okay, because I think that really impacted Blaney for sure.
Yeah, you can tell from what I've read this week, you know, and Blaney is, he's kind of a sensitive, private guy anyway. And Blaney knows in his head, I could have prevented that. I mean, he didn't do anything really wrong. You know, Ron, 20 years ago, we talked a lot this week about this. Cars didn't push each other all over the racetrack trying to win the race. I mean, there was some etiquette of, yeah, you would draft and maybe you would bump them, but you didn't kind of push each other all over the racetrack trying to get an advantage. So that's a lot more accepted. 20 years ago or so, we didn't see blocking as prevalent as it is now. And Ryan Newman or Ryan Blaney, I don't think did anything wrong. It was just a component of how they connected there that Newman's car kind of got over on the left rear and turned around the wrong way and hit the fence. But, man, I'll tell you, like Callie said, Ryan Blaney was visibly upset afterwards. Something we hadn't seen and I would like to see is the in-car camera of Denny Hamlin. I mean, if you look, those cars got close enough when Ryan Newman came across the front straightaway, they were close enough that Denny Hamlin's cow flaps flickered. And I mean, you got to be super close for a car for that to happen. He couldn't have missed him 3 inches when Newman came back across in front of him. I was just curious if he ever lifted or not. I don't know. Of course, Newman may not have. Newman may not have lifted till he hit the wall. You know, you're seeing the checkered flag waving, man, and you're on go, and your foot is through the floorboard. So it made it interesting. It definitely gave us something to talk about. I would have liked to see Newman have won the race. Because I was really not for the Toyotas at all. A lot of people know I'm a Toyota guy as far as my personal vehicles, but I'm not a huge Toyota race fan. And those cars laying in the back at the first segment of the race, like 20 seconds behind, that kind of irked me. You know, I've always been taught you go as hard as you can every single lap, and maybe that's not the smartest thing to do in a Daytona 500. But I was kind of disappointed to see a Toyota win the race, to be honest with you, just from my own personal perspective. But still, from what I got to see and listen to, it was a good race.
He's Chris Gorham, the Hat Man. I'm Ron Morton, your pit boss today. She's the former Miss Food City, better known as the New Market Flash herself, Callie Corum. Together, we are the Lead Lap. The speed lines are now open, 656-9900, 656-9900. Your Bush's Beans race picks on the other side of the break. It's Bristol or bust, baby. But first, let's get some news and notes.
News and notes. Brought to you by Cox General Contracting. Call Cox.
Last Sunday at Daytona's season opener, the number 11 did it again. Denny Hamlin took the checkers at Daytona 2 years in a row. However, Hamlin's victory lap was cut short by the aftermath of a horrific last lap crash. In an all-too-familiar last lap crash, the number 6 of NASCAR veteran Ryan Newman was turned. His machine became airborne before being smashed in the driver's side door, catching fire and coming to a screeching halt on its top. The dramatic crash evoked thousands of well wishes for Newman. After exiting the hospital hand-in-hand with his daughters, this weekend, Ross Chastain will be wheeling the number 6. The 48 of Jimmy Johnson was fastest in yesterday's practice, and qualifying is set to begin around 2:30 this afternoon. News notes brought to you by Cox General Contracting.
Now, back to the fastest 2 hours in radio, the Lead Lap. Brought to you in part by Phoenix Conversions and Bobcat of Knoxville.
Well, it's one for the money, two for the show, three to get ready. Now, go, cat, go, but don't you step on my blue suede shoe. Well, you can do anything but take me over my blue suede shoe. Well, you can knock me down, step in my face, slander my name all over the place. Well, do anything that you want to do, but honey, lay off them shoes and don't you.
Welcome back. They're racing in the Sin City, also known as Las Vegas. What happens in Vegas stays in Vegas sometimes. You big Elvis fan, Chris Gorham?
You know, you got to appreciate his legacy and what he did. And that was rock and roll, man. And back in that day, that was rock and roll. And you listen to that and how well it holds up. You know, I even see Callie over there tapping her feet to that. Yeah. And
Callie, you're an Elvis fan?
I love some blue suede shoes.
All right.
I do like Elvis, a trailblazer. A trailblazer.
He was a trailblazer.
And he was. Yeah. He didn't care what anybody thought. He did his own thing and people attached to that. And, man, it kind of tapered off. There was a time Elvis maybe should have quit before he'd quit.
quit some substances for sure.
Yeah, for sure. But, you know, you think of Las Vegas and you think of Elvis Presley.
That's it. Welcome back. This week's driving question of the day. What car did you get your driver's license in? It's time to play Bristol or Bust, 656-9900, 656-9900. You could be going to Bristol on us. This year, if you want to post your driving question of the week, you think you got a good question, and if we feature it on the Lead Lap, then you're going to get a vintage Lead Lap Racing Tee limited edition. I'm going to show you those. I brought you one. You hadn't even seen them.
Very
fresh off
nice.
The press.
So it'll be a surprise.
If you think your question is good, post it on our Lead Lap Facebook page. And if we pick your question for the driving question of the week, then you are going to get a limited edition vintage Lead Lap Racing Tee. Let's get to John's call. John, you're on the Food City Lead Lap.
Right there. How we doing?
Hey, John, how are you?
Hey, I'm good, thank you.
Good. What you got on your mind?
Well, to answer your question, I got my license with a 85 Buick Skylark hatchback.
I like it.
Ooh, Skylark.
Hatchback. That was stylish.
That was rare.
Yeah. Well, unfortunately, I don't have it any longer. It would be nice if I kept it. But anyway, that's all water under the bridge.
Hey, and John, I want to give a suggestion to the young people out there. If you've got a car, whatever you're driving, try to put that thing in the barn or put it somewhere. Whatever it is, keep it. Because if I had every car that I had when I was Callie's age until now, we'd just go ahead and retire, man. We'd go to Barrett Jackson and sell all that stuff and retire. So be cool to have that Skylark back. The car I got my license in, I'd love to have it back. So keep these cars.
Yep. Right.
John, you got a pick?
Yeah, I'm going to do the hometown boy, Kyle Busch.
All right, man, we got you down for rowdy. He's already got a couple of wins out of Vegas so far. We appreciate you calling, and we're a little short on time because we got to get out at 11:30. We'll talk to you next Saturday.
Thanks, John.
All right.
See you, John. Take care. All right, have a good day. Tim, you're on the Food City Lead Lap.
Hey, how's it going?
Good, Tim. How about you?
Doing good. Car got my license in was a 69 Volkswagen.
Volkswagen.
A Beetle, I guess that's all they had in 69. So
what was the top speed?
Yeah.
What was your top speed?
About 60, I guess.
About 60.
Hey, was that a manual transmission car? 69 Beetle, I guess, was a manual transmission?
Yeah. That thing would be worth some money.
Carpet inside.
Absolutely.
Shag carpet inside.
Shag carpet.
Shag. They have it on the dash.
Yeah, buddy.
I love it. You got a pick for the race?
Bad Brad.
All right, we got you down. We'll talk to you next Saturday.
Right. Okay.
All right, Tim. We'll see you. Daniel, welcome to the Food City Lead Lap.
Hey, how's it going?
Hey, hello, I know this Daniel. Voice.
Yeah, but yeah, hey, glad to have you back, Callie.
Oh, I'm so happy to be back, Daniel. Happy to hear from you.
Well, I know y'all got to make it quick, so I'll say mine was a 95 Honda Accord.
Yeah.
95 Accord. You got your license late. You must be a young whippersnapper.
Well, I'll be 38 next month.
Okay. 95 Accord.
Was that a four-door?
Yes, it was.
Yeah.
Leather seats. I kept that thing arm-rod. Anybody in the back seat didn't have a seatbelt on. If I turned, they was sliding.
Slide out the window. I got a story I'll share at some point about Dad's race car seat in arm-rod when I was a kid. But we'll quickly move through this. But 95 Accord, have you got a pick for the race? And I'm sure you do.
Yeah, I'm going to go Kevin Harvick. John took my pick. I actually think Bush has got a pretty good shot at it, but I'm going to go Kevin Harvick, and I'm going to hope Joey Logano hits the wall because I think he caused a couple wrecks last week, knocked my guy out of it, so pee on him.
I'm looking here. It looks like Andrew's bump drafting you here right behind you, so I'm sure he's going to have some kinder words for the 2-2 when he comes on.
Yeah, well, tell him you ain't got time for all that math.
I'm sure he's got the equation. All right, Daniel, have a good day.
Thanks, guys.
All right, man. Let's get to Andrew's call. Andrew, welcome to the Food City Elite Lap.
Hey, guys. I hope y'all are doing well. Check this out. It was 1992 Geo Prism's what I got my license in. I nailed it. I made 100.
Oh, my God. Perfect 100. Score. I'm impressed. Even and Chris Coyle didn't do that.
As far as last week goes, my favorite driver hit my driver into Daniel's driver and knocked my driver and Daniel's driver out, and then my favorite driver got knocked out. So
a rough week for the brothers.
Yeah, it was a bad week. But check this out. I'll do a little something for you guys right here. 188 days since I talked to you guys last, and that was in Bristol. Okay, I divide that by how many feet long is an NBA basketball court? That's 94. That gets me to 2. And then I add the minimum age of a U.S. senator. That'd be 30. That gets me to 32. And then I have to subtract the number of the car that I picked last week. That's Eric Amarola. And then that gets me to – I'm rolling this roulette wheel, and it gets me to 22. Joey Logano, Las Vegas, checkered flag.
I'm confused again, Andrew, but not surprised.
I love the way that roulette wheel ended on 22 yellow.
Hey, and real quick, Ron, I know, sir. You've got that flow.
I do have the flow.
I've got the no flow.
You got the no flow?
I'm with you.
I got the no flow.
Is that the no flow or the no flow?
It's a no flow.
That's a no flow.
No flow.
You a mofo with a no flow.
Can we say that on radio?
Sure.
We were talking about possum peckers last week before we got censored.
No, coon peckers.
Oh, is that what it was?
Yes.
Coon peckers?
Yeah.
Sam is muting you all
The censorship, Sam.
They tell me as long as we don't swear, we're good. Coon peckers, that's not swearing, is it?
No. I don't think so.
Only here on the lead lap would you hear about coon peckers.
I would hope.
He actually had a coon pecker in his bib overalls.
In his overalls.
Yeah, he said, I carry it with me everywhere I go, just in case they need to stop a leak.
In case.
Just in case.
I thought they were used for toothpicks. I don't know. Nope. Anyway.
Hey, thanks for your call. Thanks for your pick. And thanks for your mathematical equation that we always look forward to, Andrew.
And sorry for your loss, buddy.
Hey,
man. Sorry for your loss.
I appreciate it.
I don't know the guy, but I heard in your voice that he meant a lot to you. So
yeah, he did.
Y'all have a good day.
All right, brother. We appreciate it. Lossie's talking about. We're kind of dedicating today's show to Bobby Tipton. Lost a race crew buddy. Really dedicating it to all the old guys. The old guys rule, we're going to call it, for the next 45, 50 minutes. We're honoring those guys that have left before us, but established the grassroots of racing and allowed us to be in here and talk a little bit about it. So anyway, we'll get more of your calls on the other side of the break. We are the lead lap on the Sports Animal. Hall of Famer Herman Goddard on the other side of the break. But first, Callie Corum with Track Facts.
That's a fact, Jack. Track Facts, brought to you by Phoenix Conversions.
Tomorrow, racing is happening in the heart of Sin City at Las Vegas Motor Speedway. The 1.5-mile track is banked 12 to 20 degrees and holds a capacity of 80,000 fans. Last year's winner was the number 22 of Joey Logano, and the track record was set by Kurt Busch in 2016 with a speed of just over 196 miles per hour. Track Facts brought to you by Phoenix Conversions, when it has to be the best.
30.
Now, back to the fastest 2 hours in radio, the Lead Lap. Brought to you in part by Cox General Contracting and CFI Insulation.
Well, it's currently the Harley J. Earl Trophy, but if you keep this up, Denny Hamlin, it's going to have to become the Denny Hamlin Trophy. And I go back to what you and Gabehart talked. I believe it was yesterday before the race started, and he reminded you, 25 years since someone has repeated, how important was that to you coming into this race this weekend?
Very. He reminds me all the time that we can make history. It's up to us to go do it. But I tell you, I couldn't do it without the race team. The cars are so fast, and been very fortunate. Each win has been so different in the way that we've won them. But I tell you, each one has got a special place in my heart for it.
I've got to walk you through that final restart. Now, the first part of it was before the restart. You made the decision to go to the top and leave the teammates on the bottom. Was there any apprehension in doing that when Ryan Newman was the guy who really pushed you all day long?
Yeah, I mean, I second-guessed myself a little bit. I mean, I got to the point where I asked the crew chief, you know, what do you think? And he's like, well, why are you asking me? What does your playbook say? You know, he knows I have a playbook at the end of these races, and I just decided to stick with it and not care who was linked up or anything. I just stuck with it and luckily got the right push there. I was able to, you know, back off and check my brakes there at the end to keep the 12 linked up with me. So he really gave me the push to get clear. And then essentially is the one that created that huge runge down the backstretch with the six that I had to let those guys go. There was no way with the closing rate that they had that I was going to be able to block them effectively. So my job at that point was just to let them take position. I wanted to be on the outside. I linked up with the 12 there, and I knew I was going to give him in turn a push off of four that he was going to do something with, and that the race was not over for me. So once I saw I got him to the six, I decided to get as far away from those guys as I could, knowing that there was likely going to be contact. And luckily the six kind of just came right across my nose there, and I saw the 12 slightly ahead, went down there, side drafted them, and pulled out the victory.
So when the 12 and 6 go by you, you were not thinking your race is over? Because I would say everybody in the grandstands and half of pit road thought, well, Denny's done. How did you make it happen from there?
Well, a lot of that is my spotter making a great call to check up there, you know, because I was going to be beside the 12 entering turn three, but we were done. You know, my best shot was to push him to the lead and let those two fight it out and me pick up the trash in the end. But it worked out fortunate where Ryan barely got clear of our nose there, and I was able to side draft the 12 right at the line.
So that's the mechanics of it. But then you learn about the Ryan situation, and is it difficult to celebrate in sort of a muted situation like that where you don't know at the time of when we're taping this what's going on with Ryan?
Yeah, I mean, that's the number one precedent we all have to think about at this time. I mean, this is way more important than any victory that you might have, no matter how big the race is. So I'm good friends with Ryan. We worked well together, as you saw at the end of the race. We've worked together in these tandem situations for years. So, he's been a great competitor and a guy that, really set the standard on speed when I came into the sport. So hoping all is well with him and thinking about it, him and his family at this point.
That was Denny Hamlin, the winner, and the lone Toyota finishing first in Daytona Monday afternoon. You're listening to the Food City Lead Lap. Here's how it ran down. Daytona 500 top 10 finishers were Denny Hamlin in a Toyota. Right behind him was Ryan Blaney in a Ford, Kevin Harvick in a Ford, Chris Buescher in a Ford, Ryan Newman in a Ford, Kyle Larson in a Chevy, Chase Elliott in a Chevy, David Reagan in a Ford, Ricky Stenhouse in a Chevy. Chris Corum, there's a lot of Chevys and Fords.
Yeah.
You had to get all the way to 18th, I think, to get Jones, which was the next Toyota finishing position. Were you surprised by that?
Yeah, I mean, there was only five of them. So if you look at the law of averages, I mean, there were the percentage of them finishing, if you equaled it out, was not great, but a Toyota won. And I'm sure Toyota OEM was thrilled about that. But, yeah, I think there was like 19, I had the numbers, I think there was like 19 Chevrolets, 14 Fords, and then 5 Toyotas. 19 Chevrolets, 10 Fords, and 16 Fords, and 5 Toyotas. So not a lot of Toyotas with a chance, but 1-1. So, but then you see the Chevrolets and Fords sprinkled throughout. So, yes, it's as far as parity goes, I guess it was pretty interesting.
We're dedicating our show today to Bobby Tipton, which we lost at Daytona last week. He was a huge fan of the show and a huge fan of racing. Just a great guy and just a guy that could fix anything and make it better along the way. We're going to get to Lynn's call, Scotty's call, Robert's call, and Rusty's call. Be patient with us. We've got a special guest coming on here that we're going to join right now. Speaking of one of the guys that's still with us, he's a National Dirt Late Model Hall of Famer and also in the Knoxville Sports Hall of Fame, Herman Goddard. Welcome to the Lead Lap. Good morning, Herman.
Good morning. Good morning. Good to have you on the show, okay?
Thanks for calling in.
Yeah, Herman. Hey, a good friend of mine and a good family friend, Herman Goddard, and all the Goddards. We grew up together, didn't we, Herman? Herman and I were talking earlier this morning about, all the friends and family and memories that you make. And Herman, we're kind of revisiting some of those old stories. And man, I know you got a treasure chest full of them.
Got a few of them. I guess the best one, one of the best ones I have at Newport, that was in 76, Chris.
76.
Yeah. I went to the wall up at Newport under the guardrail, and this lady pulled her car up there on the outside there at the ticket office and got a ticket. Went in, and they told her she couldn't park there, and she gave them support, church word that she'd park wherever she wanted to. She had a ticket. So she hadn't got this sitting down until I came to the wall, and I had that brand new car in the passenger side and drove it over to almost the radio. It had less than 100 miles on it.
Hey, now we're talking about driver's license, so there's some driver's license to this story too, right?
I was going to get to that. Anyway, I was sort of analyzing what went on, my damaged my vehicle and the race car, and this guy came up to me and said, I've already got her information, said, I need your driver's license, I'm going to write you a reckless driving ticket on it. I said, man, I ain't got no driver's license to drive that fast. I got a pit pass with a bunch of numbers on it, if you want that. And he got smart with me, and he said, I'll put you so-and-so in jail because I need your driver's license. So, and I said, before we get into this, we need to go up and talk to Ed Turner, which is the owner. I said, before we get into a problem. So I went up there, and so happened this guy was a high sheriff, Bobby Stinson of Newport. and he told him to go sit down and leave me alone.
Back to the pit. He's going to write you a reckless driving ticket for a race car accident. That's a, yeah, that's pretty interesting. But totaled a new 76. Did you say it's a Chevrolet?
It's brand, this thing just bought it at Spinny Chevrolet that day and drove it from other to the racetrack. It had less than 100 miles on it.
And you ran through it. Now, I remember a day, too. Now, I remember this vividly. I was a kid, but Atomic Speedway, you went out of that place, too, going into turn 3 and 4.
Yeah, went 150 foot in the air out in the parking lot.
Yeah, I remember that. I mean, I can still see that Camaro going out of the racetrack at Atomic, landed way out in the parking lot, and it hurt you a little bit that night, didn't it?
Yeah, it did. It put me out for a couple of days. It gave me a concussion. But the funny part about it is I landed between two cars in the parking lot, and they couldn't find me.
I wasn't sure which car you were in.
I was hid out there upside down in between two cars.
Yeah, it's
anyway, everything turned out good. I got out.
Well, hey, Herman, we appreciate your legacy and your friendship, man, and, you know, I appreciate you. Herman calls about once every couple weeks and checks on me and Mom, and, you know, just a good family friend that was a terrific race car driver, and, man, I'm glad you could come on the show with us this morning.
I appreciate it. I got another story. We was at Newport one night. LD was leading the race, and Little Bill was on second, and I was running third, and we had some drugs. Bet one of those that run across the racetrack between us, and which they did. And I don't know how all three of us missed all of them, but they took them and put them in jail. I don't know if you remember that or not.
I do remember that. That's back when the big wedge cars, big cyborg cars were out, and you're running about 12-second laps at Newport. And there were some people, what Herman's talking about, some people decided about the time those cars come off of turn two, they were going to run across the straightaway to leave the racetrack. And they didn't realize that in about 3 seconds, those cars were going to be there. And Dad and LD still talked about that, because I think Dad and LD were about side by side, and you were right behind them. And neither one of them were going to lift. And I think that girl, they said the girl, when she got across the guardrail, passed out. It scared her so bad. Because those cars were really fast, and there was a lot of wind. If you got close to those cars, they pushed so much air, it felt like a tornado when those things come by you. And, yeah, man, that was a good story, too. Dad still talked about that, and LD remembers it, too. LD Ottinger, we're talking about, who was a Busch Grand National champion prior to that. So, yeah, man. But the thing is, there's 1,000 of those stories. Dad always told them. I never tired of them. And if there's anything I can say to the young people, listen to all the old stories, because they talk about stuff that you just couldn't physically do today.
Right. I'm going to tell you another story. I had a wreck down at Atomic Speedway down there that totaled my car, and I was going on vacation next week. And Tim Burdine helped me forever for 40 years, 50. And my two sons built that race car the next week. I was going on vacation. We came back. And they had it ready, and I went back to the Atomic that week and won the race. And those guys knew as much about race cars as I did, what I'm trying to say. My two sons and Bush Gregg and Tim Burdine.
Yeah, and that's one thing. When I think back at the grit and the work ethic that those people had, now they still do some amazing things with rebuilding race cars and whatnot, but, man, there's a lot of times now I'll see people just sit out for the weekend, or they'll be out for a week or two trying to fix their car that you guys did overnight, basically. You know, they talk about going to the frame jig and putting a clip on it, man. The frame jig back in those days was an oak tree and a chain and a come along out next to the shop. That's how you straighten them enough to get them close and hit the racetrack again, because you guys raced 4 or 5 nights a week back in those days.
Right. That's true. I mean, it was a lot of fun. I mean, it was fun back then. It's become money, sport, and it takes a lot of fun out of it. And also, your competitors, you raced against them, garage against garage. It wasn't pocketbook against pocketbook, and that's what made it fun. I mean, it was a family deal, and you raced against one another, not the money.
Well, my dad used to talk about a lot of the fun in racing was held Monday through Friday or whenever at the shop every night. You know, those guys were 10 or 12 of them were at the shop hanging out and working on race cars and just being cool, I guess, back then, you know. And it was a different time, no doubt.
That's true. I mean, that's what I'm talking about. Every garage had a crowd of people that surrounded that car each week, went and watched and see if you won or not, or see what happened. It just is a lot more interest back then than we are now.
Herman, one last question, and we'll let you go. We appreciate you calling in and hanging out with us this morning. What our driving question of the day is, what kind of car did you get your driver's license in? What about you?
1950 Ford four-door.
1950 Ford four-door.
Yeah. My dad had a 50. That's what he had.
Yeah. Where did you get your driver's license then?
That was kind of fun. I was right there on Chapman Highway across from Baptist Hospital.
I thought you might be one of these that said you didn't have one. I didn't know. You know, Dale Earnhardt said last year that he really didn't realize that you had to have a driver's license.
He just drove.
He just drove.
Yeah.
Lord, I drove on the street since I was 14.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Exactly, yeah. Exactly. All right, Herman, we appreciate you hopping on with. We're going to have you in studio here this year and sit with us for a couple hours and just tell stories.
I love that, and you guys have a good weekend.
All right, man. Sure. That's Herman Goddard.
I want to ask you one last question. Bobby Tip, was he a CPA?
No, he was a builder, but he was from South Knoxville. I know he knows Rusty real well. They went back and forth a little bit, but Rusty knows him real well. But he was a gearhead, and he'd been around sport forever.
Okay.
All right, man. Have a great day.
Thank you.
Thank you. You too. That's Herman Goddard joining us here on Lee Lap. Love hearing those old stories.
Yeah, man, he's a regional treasure here. Everybody knows Herman, and he grew up and he lived it, and just you know, a lot of those guys were rough characters. I mean, some of them not the most integrity that you want to hang around, but that's one thing cool about Herman. He was a good guy too, mm-hmm. and a lot of people know him and appreciate his friendship.
Absolutely.
That was a taste of what family dinners have been for my whole life. Yep. Racing story. I love it.
There's no way you could get in there. Hey, Xfinity qualifying today at 1, Cup qualifying today at 2:35, Xfinity race today at 4, and the green flag will wave tomorrow in Sin City at 3 p.m. We're going to get to Lynn's call, Tyler's call, Robert's call, Rusty's call. On the other side of the break, we got a full bank. Stay tuned. You're listening to the Food City Lead Lap.